Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Spohr and Nick Pollack.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollack, and joining me in our leather chairs with the lovely robes around our waist, it's Paul Spohr. Hi, Paul.
Nick, it's great to talk with you, man. Sorry we missed a week. That was on me with the scheduling, but it's great to be back by the fire. Talking some baseball, another week in the books, and more pitching to talk about. We got some interesting topics, and of course, we got to get to our games as well. So I'm very excited to chat with you.
Absolutely, and you know, as this crackling fire goes by, we see a lot of the fire, the energy appear and then disappear, and that is the topic for today. Who are the guys that we see are doing well or have that light, but might fade as our log disintegrates in front of us? One that we did not put down that I don't really think is a proper sell high. And this is actually the thing that we struggled with the most, I think, coming up with names for this. There are a lot that we want to say are sell highs, but are obvious sell highs, and are ones that we don't know, we don't really think are going to stick around. One that we didn't mention, say like Spencer Turnbull, but that's because the Phillies are not really going to be using him. Same with Yariel Rodriguez, because we also know that he's going to get displaced. And I think both of those, correct me if I'm wrong, Spohr, you would have labeled as sell highs before these manager quotes.
Yeah, I certainly think you could sell high on them. Although I will make a case that there could be a buying opportunity on Rodriguez, in that he will now be in leveraged situations where he could start vulturing wins. Could he maybe not go back into that fabled Ryan Yarbrough run that we've been, you know, kind of trying to force somebody into ever since he ran that off there when he was a true follower? And we haven't really seen Tampa Bay, of course, they're the ones that instituted that. We haven't seen them really commit to anybody. We're always hoping it's going to be somebody. But maybe the Blue Jays with Yariel Rodriguez find that here. And so I wonder if there's even perhaps some buy low opportunity coming off this news, which deflates the excitement on Yariel Rodriguez. Do you maybe swoop in and say, I'll take the 5 to 6 innings a week and try to snake a win with consistency? I don't know. I think it's more of a deep league play, obviously. You need more bankable starting stuff in your 10s and 12s. But I wonder if in a 15, it might not be a bad idea with Yariel Rodriguez.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm not totally convinced that Yariel Rodriguez is that great. We did Yariel Communication as the SP Roundup title. BC Boys, what's up? I knew you would. I didn't know if everyone else would. It's a slider sweeper, right? I mean, it's a sweeper with a fastball. And for the most part, there are some extra little things there, but that's really the crux of what he does. It's not that impressive to me for Rodriguez, where we've seen in the past these SP6s that aren't really getting that full opportunity. We just want any inning that we get from them. And I'm not so convinced that that's Rodriguez as bankable. However, it is Alek Manoah, and we have no idea how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
So we might actually do see just piggybacking happen in those starts. And yeah, that could be that Yarbrough thing. The real interesting thing here, Spohr, is that you're saying Tampa Bay doesn't have a replacement for the Fratty Pirate. And I disagree. That would be T. Lex.
Yeah, I knew who you were going to say there.
He actually pitches just like him. It's so funny.
But the problem is,
he's not getting opened enough.
Is they're starting to start him now. Yes, they right. It looked like they were going to. I'm actually in on this Tyler Alexander situation here. I would be so much more in on it if they would commit to making him the next Fratty Pirate, Ryan Yarbrough. But in 2 of his 4 outings, he's gotten traditional starts, including 5 1/3 last time out. He got 6 innings in relief for his only win. Of course, pitched in Colorado, got knocked around a little bit. Toronto beat him up a little bit too in a follow situation, but he's doing some interesting things. Like you said, he is, you know, kind of that finesse guy who's not going to walk guys, maybe going to get some strikeouts, maybe going to have a little trouble with homers. But in those 3 to 5 inning stints in the middle of games, it can be useful. But now that he's a traditional starter, I don't know if Tyler Alexander is going to have that vibe, but I'm keeping tabs on him. And I picked him up in a deeper league. He's on the bench right now, kind of bench depth. He gets my Tigers this week. Actually, no, pardon me. He is starting because it is the Tigers. That lineup cannot hit. I think Tyler Alexander is a start, but if he will get more traditional openers, or not, I guess that's not traditional, but if he does get openers, I like him exponentially more when you're talking about Tyler Alexander.
Yeah, I call him T-Lex. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to call him like Dino Bag or something like that, like a tea bag, but Dino, right? Of course. And, which actually I'm realizing so many ways I do not want to call him that. I could see the Rays actually getting that opener for him. I mean, it is the Tigers this week. And as we go through, of course, our scoreboard for Spore versus me, and we'll have that, of course, at the end of this podcast. I considered Tyler Alexander as the streamer, but it's just, it's too whatever. And I still remember Eck talking about Yarbrough and like how much he hated watching that. I'm like, I totally understand. And I just can't get behind it. So regardless of all of that, we're going to talk about sell high candidates here. And I have more of your kind of pedestrian ones, not really the big name guys. We tried to really think about who are the bigger names. And I think you have a much bigger one, which is very interesting to me. I'm going to start with a guy that I actually had ranked pretty low on the list when I did my update yesterday. I just called him a traditional Toby on a Vargas rule. And he actually really impressed me yesterday. And when I think about this guy, he's someone who in the past we have had, I think he's kind of the mold of the pitcher that we sometimes disagree about, because I think that Ranger Suarez is one of those command finesse pitchers that when he's in a rhythm, he can be great, but that gets interrupted. And when it gets interrupted, it then goes into a massive valley for a while. And so Ranger Suarez, the first three starts, actually four starts, one was, I believe, against Atlanta, and then three against really weak opponents. And he was cruising for those last three. I'm like, okay, well, there you go. In Cincinnati last night, Ranger Suarez really showed up, seven innings, shut up all five Ks, had his best command I've seen from him. Up and arm side cutters to righties, down and away changeups, beautifully missed the middle of the zone. That is peak Ranger Suarez. It's also peak Vargas rule. And if you don't know the Vargas rule, that is you start this guy until he falters and loses that rhythm, that groove, and then you move on, because as a command guy, not a stuff guy, you need to be feeling all of this, and then when it gets disrupted, it's hard to get it back. So I personally am going to see the glorious ratios that you have for Ranger Suarez on a winning club and say, look, you think that this is a stable top 30, top 35 starter for the year. Great. I need that outfielder that is the hole on my team right now, that your outfield three that I need. Great. I'm going to sell you Ranger Suarez for that one. Would you be doing that with Suarez in your 12 teamers?
I can certainly get behind that, yeah, because I do think you can actually get something legit for Suarez right now. He's 4-0, 136 ERA, 0.70 whip. The whip is best in baseball. The ERA is the best in the National League. We are seeing something here. It's not just the one standout start against Colorado. It is a nice little run here for Ranger Suarez. People are going to say, you know what? This is bankable, and I can keep getting the wins even as the ratios regress, because even his biggest fan is going to realize that Ranger Suarez's ratios are going to move upward. That's easy. To what is the question? You probably have them going back more toward maybe his career marks, or even higher. It's a 3.27 career ERA. I could see it even, you know, going beyond that, but it's a 1.27 whip. That's really the key, is what's the whip going to look like from here forward from a Ranger Suarez? I can buy that the ERA actually stays pretty good, but what kind of whip am I going to get? Can he maintain this halving of his walk rate down to 4% from a career 8% mark? If he can hold gains there, then we're talking about something. Here's the bottom line, though. Even if he happens to hold some of these gains and Ranger Suarez does have a career year, I'm not upset about possibly selling him here. If I get the right piece that I need and I get more value out of the trade than what I paid for at the draft table or the waiver wire pickup for Ranger Suarez, that's all you really need to worry about. So don't get hung up on whether or not he continues at a high clip. Did you get the value that you needed for your ball club? So I think you can actually sell Ranger Suarez high. This is not one of those fluke ones, because sometimes these guys early on, people are going to see right through it. You mentioned Turnbull. Nobody's buying that, especially with Taiwan Walker coming back. Let me try to think of another one. Like, he's on the IL right now, but nobody would really pay premium prices for Cody Bradford, even if he wasn't on the IL. No offense to him. It's just the market isn't going to buy that yet. But Suarez has been around for a while. He has his believers. There's a market out there. I agree. I totally understand this pick.
Yeah, and you had some fun ones. One I agree with, one I don't. So this is great. So who's your first one you want to talk about?
Yeah, first one is a Bryce Miller out in Seattle, who, again, I do like. I don't really have negative things to say about him, but it's about selling high, cashing in something, and getting more than what you think he's going to be the rest of the way. And again, nobody thinks he's going to be a 185 ERA, 082 whip. But I think he could be more, much more in line with his projections, which are like a high threes, low fours ERA with a 120, low 120s whip. That's still very useful, especially in 15s. But when we're talking 12s, that's one of those guys that you're not even starting all the time at that point. And yet Bryce Miller is young enough, had a strong enough season last year that people can believe that this is growth. I guess in a little bit of a way, I don't want to say we're not trying to deceive anybody, right? Like, when you're trading, you're not deceiving anybody, but you're wanting to see if someone's buying in more than you are. And I'm not quite at the level that Bryce Miller has arrived. I think this is a hot Bryce Miller. This is a four-start run that he could have at any moment in a given season. But because it's at the beginning, it looks like, oh, is it the beginning of growth? And you can cash in again for something similar to what you could get for Suarez. A really premium outfielder that you're going to play every day and put in your lineup, maybe a middle infielder type. I really think you can get a nice return on Bryce Miller. So I'm looking to sell high here.
Yeah. So Bryce Miller, to me, I had actually a really fun conversation yesterday while I did the list. If you guys don't know, I stream it every week. And if you have any sort of contentions with it or confusions with it, just like 2 to 7 sometimes, and I'm just writing all these ridiculous notes. And someone brought up, Ashton brought up Bryce Miller, being like, look, I think like Bryce Miller is fantastic. We're too low on him. I have him at 33 right now, and that he's going to progress into being this ace. I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, 185 ERA and 0.82 whip thus far for Bryce Miller. And you see the obvious things, right? That left on base rate, come on, and like the BABIP and stuff. But
yeah,
to me, it's Bryce Miller isn't really doing anything that different.
That's the thing,
right? He's not. I want him to progress so much and say, look, like, you have this four seamer that is good. It's not necessarily overwhelmingly amazing, but I mean, some ways it is. It's like a 19% swing strike rate, which is 97th percentile among all four seamers thus far. And we were hoping that, a new sinker, splitter, slider, something else really making a massive difference. And so far, the sinker it's like a massive, massive cold strike pitch for him so far. Against both righties and lefties included, it's 35% called strike rate on that sinker, and he throws it 20% of the time. Like, that's not going to stick. That shouldn't. He's not really locating it pristinely to lefties. He's doing a good job with it against righties. But is a splitter enough? It's not quite there all the time. It's a 60% strike rate, only a 17% swing strike rate for Bryce Miller's splitter, which is below average, actually, on splitters.
It's generally your results.
Well, but how do you use that, right?
Exactly. And it's an 097 BABIP against lefties. So, like, that's the thing, too, that someone might be buying in. They see, okay, he's tamed some of this platoon split to where he's now a reverse platoon, 457 OPS against lefties, 552 against righties. I'm not as sold on that because I don't think the splitter is so ready-made. So, it's performing well right now.
Yeah, the one of the things I really am trying to focus on a bit, I always have like my this year's thing that I want to really preach and make sure we're all on the same page about. And one of them is result stats for individual pitches, like event stats. Because when you look at the splitter, he doesn't throw it much in the zone. He throws like 38% of the time. He doesn't throw it when he's behind in the count. Okay. He's only when he's ahead. So because of that, you should always expect good batted ball results because he's just not throwing it in a place that would result in a good batted ball. If you swing at it, you make contact with it, right? The biggest risk is if it's going to be a strike or not. And so generally with splitters, I mean, you see this with like Kodai Senga's forkball, you see this with Glasnow's curveball, right? These have amazing WOBA stats and BABIPs and whatnot because they're throwing them in counts that aren't going to be ball four. You throw them in counts that'll be strike three. and you're throwing them out of the zone where if there is contact made, then it should be a good result because it's going to be off the end of the bat or something like that, right? So the splitter isn't getting the whiffs that you want yet. It's helping. It certainly is. It's better than last year's Bryce Miller, right? But that's a good thing. And last year's Bryce Miller was a 4.32 ERA with a 1.14 whip and a 22% strikeout rate, I should say, but 8.5 hit per nine. And that hit per nine is 4.8 right now for Bryce Miller. So is this sinker getting called strikes, the splitter that is a helpful weapon, but really the slider sweeper that is there? Slider has like a 12% swing strike rate, and like he's like getting it into the zone-ish. Sweeper that is, I don't really like this sweeper much. He's not really taking that leap yet, right?
And that's the thing. I just haven't seen a major jump here. And honestly, and by the way, this isn't to like denigrate all the next level analysis because it's excellent and it really colors what we're at here. But like, just straight up, the fact is, it's like a 1.5, 2 point maybe strikeout minus walk jump. It's a point and a half-ish swinging strike rate jump, depending on if you even use decimals. I round up. Okay, so it's from 17 to 19% strikeout minus walk. That is not a tangible jump after four starts for Bryce Miller. That is within the range of outcomes of a good run. These have been four great starts, but I think you can sell high on somebody thinking that this is the breakout. You get a little bit more value than what you would normally get for him, and you're not upset even if he does happen to improve the splitter to where he is being more bankable with the breakout. That's fine too. Same with Suarez. If they happen to keep going, you're still not mad because you still got something strong, but you're planning against the potential of a real come down. Because there's also, will Bryce Miller be 4 ERA, 1.20 whip from here forward? Or will it be the thing where he has the bad outings? And I know that this isn't like mathematically sound. Guys don't have to like give back their regression to the point where he has to get his season numbers to 4 ERA, 1.20. But it happens a lot, Nick, right?
Oh, yeah, like, all the time.
It happens all the time. And I know the math guys cringe at that because like that's not how math works. I understand it's not how math works, but it is kind of how baseball works, right? Like a lot of the time. Luis Arraez hits 200 for 3 weeks. Is he going to hit 300 from here forward, or is he going to hit 320 to get up to 300? And a lot of times they hit the 320. So I'm belaboring the point, but I just think Bryce Miller is a good sell high. Even if he's somebody you like, you can get a lot right now because I think he has real strong believers. If one of them's in your league, you're taking home a really quality bat.
Yeah. And you know, they're humans. Humans have peaks and valleys.
Exactly.
That's why we're talking about it like this. The greatest players in baseball are the ones that limit those valleys, or at least when they do happen, they are short and are not nearly as impactful. But most players, it's okay, cool. Just today, I just don't have this, and that's going to be a bad outing. So that's how we see that regression hit hard. So I mean, I really hope Bryce Miller gets it together. I really do.
I like him. He's fun to root for.
I am going to say that he is slightly better than last year, because he has a better sinker and splitter, but it's not enough for me to really think that he's having that breakout quite yet.
There's something in the back of minds for lefties that they have to think of now with the split. Even if we're not sold that it's like ready to go, it can also be a work in progress to where he continues to elevate it, and then Bryce Miller is more bankable against them. So we like him, but we're both open to selling because you think he can get a lot more back than maybe you should be able to right now.
Absolutely. So I have another sell high, and we're really making this like the primary and the secondary topic. The secondary topic is a funny one, which I feel like is just kind of in the spirit of the Fireside Chat's origins.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about that. I've got one more. Sport has one more. Of course, we have one special edition, and we're going to talk about those guys after this break. So we're back after the break from whatever that was, and at the fire here with Paul Spohr, talking about guys who are performing well at the moment, and maybe it might be the moment to sell high and get the most out of it. And someone I saw this morning on my stream, and I'm sure you've gotten a question or two about him, is Reynaldo Lopez. And what's interesting about this is I was really in on Reynaldo Lopez. I've gotten on multiple teams. He's only allowed one run for Atlanta thus far. It's been three starts against the White Sox, fine, but that was actually the one run. And then the Mets, and recently the Astros, where he went six shutout, seven Ks. Of course, the Astros are not as good as we've seen before, but a really good slider in that one. And getting a ton of strikes, 73% strike rate on the four-seamer there. However, the idea that Reynaldo Lopez has now figured out how to become a dominant starting pitcher and consistent for a winning ball club, and this is your guy you're going to ride the entire year, I'm not quite sold on that. And given how good the results have been, which is a 2-0 record, 0.5 ERA, 0.94 whip, with a 26% K rate for Reynaldo Lopez, I want to at least alert people to say, look, there are some flaws here, and this is not all of a sudden a pitcher who demands success every night that you should be banking on. A few of those would be the performance of his four-seamer, and really the overall shape of it is worse. Obviously, we expected the velocity to go down for Reynaldo Lopez. It's at 95 now instead of 98. Fine. But what he's done is he's made it a steeper four-seamer that is worse when thrown in the upper half of the zone at the cost of gaining more vert on it, but not that much, not even a full inch of vertical break. So essentially what he's done is he's made his four-seamer kind of average or slightly above average above the board, as opposed to having elements that were exceptional. That is making it flat before. So even when it had lower velocity, then maybe it's still flat. And that actually would still make it a very, you know, an exceptional one in some way. So what we've seen is a four-seamer that last year, of course, velocity was a part of it at 14 to 15% swing strike rate, just 8 to 9% thus far, with its CSW down to just 25%. And what is most startling to me is his ideal contact rate. That is how many times this four-seamer, when put into play, is beneficial to the batter when making contact. It is absurd. It is 97th percentile at just 18%. The average four-seamer ICR rate is 43% league-wide. And this is actually among the top 200 batters facing starting pitchers, right? This is not even like your qualified starter. This is just for fantasy purposes. And yeah, no, that is so absurdly unsustainable for Reynaldo Lopez. So that would explain this hit per nine that's at 5.5 at the moment. That would explain the 94% left on base rate, which is just like the obvious early season whatever. But I do want to highlight that this is not as amazing of a fastball as I think I expected it to be so far. And the slider has kept up its part of the bargain, right? 19% swing strike rate. It looked really good against the Astros, but just a 60% strike rate. We were really expecting this 55% strike rate from before as a reliever to hopefully become that like 65% strike rate pitch to really become more reliable for him. He's keeping it down and at a very consistent rate. I mean, we're talking a low lock here of 78%. So that is 86% of all sliders by starting pitchers. Reynaldo Lopez's slider, super low. And that's good. That means a lot of grounders on it, a lot of very few fly balls, just 9% fly ball rate, which is a crazy low amount. But I'm seeing someone that has to throw too many of these questionable fastballs for strikes for this to really work. The curveball isn't doing enough with it, the changeup, no. And this looks very susceptible, very precarious. I don't know what you can get for Reynaldo Lopez necessarily right now. I think he's going to have an amazing start against the Miami Marlins on Wednesday.
Yep.
I think it's going to be incredible. I'd be tempted to start him as my roundup and say, okay, great. Now is the time to do
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. And I concur on that. And listen, I come in as somebody who loves Reylo. In fact, we talked about that when, and I don't bring this up to like bam you or anything, so let me be clear on that. When we talked about AJ Puck and why part of why I jumped on board when you sold me was I've loved Reylo for so long and I'm buying his SP, RP to SP. Why would I abandon Puck? And by the way, when you recommended him, he wasn't the command guy that we see right now. So again, that's not brought up to be a dig.
No, of course not. Absolutely.
But I had brought up, you know, how much I love Raylo, and yet I fully co-sign this because one of the things you say, you don't know how much you're gonna be able to get. I think you can actually get a premium just by his residence in Atlanta. Mm. Being on a great team will raise the bar here in what you can get because people got to chase dubs. You just have to. You don't want to. It's a pain in the butt. It's the toughest part of this game sometimes, but you got to chase those dubs. And so even if you know in your mind, again, 0.5 ERA, 0.94 whip, no duh that Raylo's not going to maintain those. But can he be, again, mid to upper threes ERA, sub 130 whip, and a bag full of dubs? Yes, he could be. However, this is now 3 weeks in a row, Nick, that they have removed him from a potential two-step. And I think that this is their small way of mitigating his innings, which makes sense, right? Yes, he's 30. No, they don't have to baby him, but he's been a full reliever now for the past 2 years. And even in 2021, when he got 9 starts, it was still only a 58 inning season. So they might want to space this out a bit. And this is an easy way to do that with the extra day off here and there. He was on now, if they had just moved him to today, he would have been on a full Tuesday pattern every Tuesday. Now he's going to Wednesday. And so they're going to shift him around a little bit. And what that might mean is just a handful fewer starts, which in the aggregate might not be too bad, but just another reason that you might want to sell high. If somebody's thinking that they're going to get 30 something starts here from Reynaldo Lopez, I think it's going to be closer to 25, 26. They could be good. I do like him. I'm not fully out, but I think you can really cash in because of his residence on a quality team. You find somebody like me in your league who's been a fan of his in the past too and says, you know what? I've got some offense that I could trade for. Because I'll be honest, I would actually buy high on Raylo in the right situation too. Again, we're not selling these guys to dupe people. It is because that you can cash in and you can see somebody else with an offensive advantage versus your pitching deficiency and make it fit there. I would actually buy on Raylo, and you're not going to get the same price you paid at the draft table or off the waiver wire. So I would give, the only guy I can think of right now is on the IL, so it's not a great example, but like Tyler O'Neill, I would do that. And I think that that would be a sell high for the Raylo person. And that would be a move that I could get comfortable with. And maybe that would even still work because, okay, he's on the IL, but he has higher upside than Raylo, something like that. So we don't have to worry about the name so much. But I think this is a good recommendation, even while fully advocating for somebody like Raylo this year, just because I think being a part of Atlanta's staff is going to increase the shine in the market.
Right, and really make sure that the value getting back is relative to their expectation of performance, not just wins. If you're getting something equivalent that is just wins, you might as well just write it out. But if it actually is someone saying, yeah, no, Raylo is going to be a rock across the board, especially after the Miami Marlins start, which again, should be good for him.
He should cook.
The arsenal is not looking like that kind of guy. So there might be a way for you to finagle that into something gaining value. You have a very interesting next one.
This one is
I don't know if I'm on the same page with it. I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Yeah, totally open for this debate here too, because this one's on a different plane than the other three, I think. First off, almost certain that someone in your league has loved this guy. It's Yusei Kikuchi, okay? 33 years old, false starts before, right? Lucy kicking the football, Charlie Brown style, you know, pulling the football at the last second. We've had some false starts with him where it's like, is it there? You know, he always looks great in spring, the stuff coming out in the upper 90s. He settles into the mid 90s. But then last year, we might have seen a little bit of a corner turned. Kept the ball in the park a bit, had a nice run. That is carrying over even with more home run suppression. It's down to 0.7 homers per nine, but it's a 9% homer to fly ball, which is where some of my skepticism comes in. Now, I am encouraged by the ground ball spike. This is now up to a 5-year high of 49%. That's great. So the ball is down more often. Interestingly, the home run to fly ball rate also being down in concert there is really helping things because it's putting the ball in the air less and it's going out less when it does go in the air. So that's great. I remain a bit skeptical on a 1.6 career home run trajectory, though, that he falls into old habits and the home runs come back with a vengeance. And that's kind of the quickest way to ruin an ERA. And it could turn Kikuchi back into the volatile guy in those 12s where where you're nervous about starting him, and there's no great pattern with the home run guys. Yes, of course, home run parks, you'll be more likely to sit or whatever, sure. But my fear with these guys is you start sitting the gems and starting the duds because they're not as much matchup dependent as they are, is the stuff working? You know, because if you give up a three-run homer to the Marlins, you're in just as much trouble as if you give a three-run homer to the Braves. Right. Well, maybe not as much trouble, but you get my point. So I just still have a little bit of trepidation that Kikuchi has, quote-unquote, arrived. I think this is a big litmus test week. He already stood tall against KC. I love that going into KC. The one thing that that park does suppress is homers, so that's great. He did allow one, but only two runs. And then he gets the Dodgers this weekend. I'm really, really excited to see what Kikuchi does against the Dodgers here. But I think that because he's been around for a while and he's had believers, that you pair last summer with this year so far, and you can really cash in on him. And I'm just not sure that he's arrived as a low 3 ERA, sub 1.12 whip type of guy with a bunch of Ks. And I'm curious if you're going to tell me differently. I'm certainly open to hearing it. The homers remain in the back of my head as the biggest fear point for Kikuchi.
So here I got a fun stat for you. This is going to be, you're going to love this. Okay. So quick overview for how I see Kikuchi is last year around the start of June, he started to go fastball, curve, slider. He shelved the cutter, started to throw this curveball for strikes over the zone, you know, over the plate, and then just kind of pitch backward with his slider and curve and then save his four seamer to put away guys. And the first start of the year, and that's really when he added all of his success. I mean, I think everybody knows how good Kikuchi was in this stretch, but it was 21 starts starting on June 4th to the end of the year with a 3.56 ERA, a 1.20 whip, and a, let's see here, a 28% strikeout rate, right? That's kind of what we're hoping for. That's where we're going for, right? And what happened was really funny is that the first start of the year, what does Kikuchi do? He says, cool, I have a new changeup grip. I'm going to throw 14 of those and only 12 curveballs and 15 sliders. And it was terrible. It was so bad. It was a 43% strike rate. So then he stopped doing it. He just like, it's like, oh, cool. That's bad. So I'm just going to not do that anymore. And he went 3% changeups the next time. We haven't seen it above 8% since. And he went back to his slider curve and change since. And that was a 3-run game. And he's allowed 4 in runs in 4 games since. And here's the thing. I look at last year and I say, okay, right, 1.45 home per nine for Kikuchi in 2023. However, if you look at it for those 21 starts, 0.91. And that's when he was using curve and slider as opposed to the cutter as well. So I'm seeing the guy that we kind of saw last year still. Like this is the same thing, curveball, slider, fastball. I am not going to sit here and tell you that Kikuchi has the greatest command ever. We saw 1.20 whip last year in that time, right? It's not like he's just impervious to damage. He had a lower walk rate, by the way, in that time, at the very least. Like it was a 6%. But because of the, I think the proneness to some more mistakes, he's still going to have a decently high hit per nine in that time. And that's going to say fine. It's going to be like 115, 120 in that range. Okay. But I mean, I see the guy that is actually last night, finally, high locking his four seamer. This is a four seamer that should be crushing upstairs. 1.7 attack angle, that is height adjusted VAA. And that essentially says it's very flat upstairs. That is 97th percentile of flatness, like Joe Ryan almost levels.
Ooh.
And he doesn't do it enough. And I've been shouting for him and both Yamamoto to do this more. 39% high lock is 16th percentile for four seamers because he's just not. Kikuchi's just not the best at locating his four-seamer upstairs, but he did it last night, had a fantastic night with his four-seamer. He actually didn't even have a slider, but it was over 12 whiffs on his slider last night, but it was fastball curve, and he located the fastball well, and he got through it. And I kind of see a guy that knows what he is now and is trying to do all the right things. The Jays are not going to lose games. He's going to be going 6-a-ton and getting a fair number of wins. I'm in on Kikuchi. I think there is still that fear that you're talking about with Kikuchi of, well, is he going to fall back? Like he's had, you know, 1.27 whip last year. Like we don't really think he's going to, you know, I don't think he's going to be a 2.20 ERA and a 1.08 whip, but
sure.
I see someone who's going to have a 25% plus strikeout rate. He's going to have ratios that you are totally fine with. with ERA and WHIP. And if you know, he's going to flirt with 10 wins, if not more. So I'm in on Kikuchi.
I can totally understand all that. Could that not still be a sell high, though, because you can really get the value? Like, obviously, you got to test the market and still see, like, okay, now if somebody is not giving you back what you think it's worth, then no, you hold. You're with Nick more and you're not really worried about the big fallback. Then you stick with your boy Kikuchi. But I wonder if you believe in him, but have pitching depth, if he isn't still worth at least exploring to see if there is that other big believer out there in Kikuchi. And now you're getting back a really, really strong bat. And again, it doesn't have to be a bat, but that's just usually the easiest way to do it. Challenge trades do happen where you basically just trade, you know, pitcher for pitcher, and we'll see who wins. But I'm more of the, like,
you always muddy the waters. Muddy the waters, allow for interpretation and stuff. That's the way you do it. You can't do straight up, because what you're saying, if you do starter for starter, like, it feels worse. Then you feel like you're missing something from the other person. Right. Yeah.
They're just going to compare the stats and be like, what? But, like, okay, let me ask you. And I know hitters are not like the number one thing that you study, but wouldn't you take like a Teoscar Hernandez for Kikuchi on the Dodgers? You know, he's a top 30 hitter thus far, according to our player meter, or 31st, excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of Teoscar Hernandez, but I'm also very aware of his ebbs and flows.
Sure. Though, you just need the end of the season.
Numbers. Yeah, that's a very good point. Maybe. I mean, I think that's a solid comp, right? Of like, think that he's going to be a top 30 hitter, Teoscar Hernandez, for the rest of the year.
No, but I think he could be top 45.
He can. He's essentially like, look, I need extra RBI production, essentially.
Yeah.
Teoscar. I am a believer in Kikuchi for this year. As far as, I think he's undervalued at the moment, because you do see these numbers and think like, okay, that's not sustainable at all.
Let me be clear too, that you can go knock on some doors for some of these players, even though we're talking about them in a sell high context. If the league manager in your league does not agree and does not feel the need to get Teoscar Hernandez or better for Kikuchi, then you buy. Even if you share some of my trepidation, you're not all the way on Nick's side. Who cares? Because I like him too. I'm not fully out. And that's why I wanted to separate him from the other three. Kikuchi is one where, like, I'm totally fine holding. If you can't get your price, you don't have to get out from under. Like, this isn't a pending collapse for me.
No, I don't think that's what you're saying either. And I'm to even mention, like, yesterday's slider was bad. Maybe that is continued to be bad. And then he doesn't get his four seamer up, and then he does collapse, right? Like, he doesn't have a backup here. That changeup isn't it. So I very well could. And it's one of those cases where you're going to see that large spectrum for a guy. So of like where people feel strongly or not. And
I would just knock on the door.
You know what's the funniest thing here? I picked him up in one league after the first start. I was able to get him after the first one. So I just
said, let me take the shot, because he got smoked. For those that don't remember, he got smoked by Tampa Bay. As Nick pointed out, his stuff was not where it needed to be. And you're like, oh boy, this is not going
to
be great.
But then he did well against the Yankees. I'm like, all right, he gets the Mariners. Sure. What the heck? He went back to it. I was like, all right, I'm in. And then
Then beat the Yankees and KC the last two times out, which has been really good because those are two very strong ball clubs. So Kikuchi's look good. I do like him. None of these pitchers am I fully out on. And so if you can't get what you want in the market, you can maintain on Suarez, Lopez, Miller, Kikuchi. But I think you need to at least see if you can cash in.
And the real thing here is, so Spore and I kind of sat down before this and we're like, you know, we have our tumblers. I had it with some ginger ale. And Spore with some good old seltzer. Actually, I don't know how you feel about seltzer. I hate seltzer. It's just worse water. But
I totally agree.
Yeah, right. Totally I don't understand. Agree. It's like, I'll take some lovely cold water.
Exactly.
And I don't get it whatsoever. Same thing with tea. Tea is just bad. I heard Ted Lasso say it's just worse water. I'm like, thank you much. I feel like really it's an old joke that everyone has about tea, but I digress. So we sat down and we were thinking, all right, let's do a sell high one. I think that's a fun time to do it. Like, who are the ones that would excel? And it was actually really hard to do this because I think a lot of the guys that we have kind of ranked in the top 30 or so are pretty much known, and there aren't really, really terrifying things. I mean, I don't think we're selling high on Kevin Gausman or anything like that. We're not jumping off of that one.
No, Gallen is an that through.
Interesting one for me. I keep going back and forth on Zach Gallen because I feel he's so precarious with how he pitches. It's kind of like the masked Blake Snell approach. He doesn't get as many strikes as we think he does, and he allows more ICR than ideal. And it's just so on the edge, but it's worked for so long. But then there's a workload. But who cares about injured starters? What matters anymore? Nothing. So anyway, there is one in the spirit of the fireside chat. And we're going to talk about that player after this break. So Spore.
Yes.
I realized that I didn't do the Plus Pitch podcast over the weekend. If you guys are listening right now, I'm likely not going to be doing it on the weekends. I'm just going to say, you know what? I needed some smaller break a little bit on the weekends.
Sometimes
now you get fireside, so be happy. Exactly. And I realized that I didn't really get an opportunity to have a deep conversation about Cole Reagans getting smoked by the Orioles. And before I even think about this or talk about it and go into whatever, I'm curious where you stand. Did you watch that game? What are your real thoughts about Cole Reagans going 1.2 innings, allowing 700 runs, 9 hits against the Orioles?
Yeah, it was definitely rough. I'm curious, like, if your mentions were lit up, you know, because it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, when a guy that's kind of tied to you does well, you get all the kudos and it's lovely. But when they do poorly, you get the people coming out like, "What's up with your guy? Is this guy trash now? Did you leave me?"
That's part of, I think, about the business.
Yeah,
all of a sudden we're the ones who throw the ball.
Exactly. And the ones who made you draft them, right? Like, you know, yes, we were, you know, encouraged by them, but we made you draft them. But no, I look at Reagans and I did watch the start going up against Burns, my main event ace there. Fun matchup, or at least, you know, supposed to be billed as such on paper. And everything just felt a bit off for Reagans. One of those things where you're so much better with the pitch stuff that you might be able to tell me if like one or two of these pitches was just not there at all. But when I look at all the metrics of everything too, because I'm kind of following it as it's going, you can follow live on Savant and keep tabs on velos and spins and whatnot. None of it came off as like, oh, this is horrific. I think one of the best teams in baseball got the better of a pitcher who simply wasn't at his best. It snowballed and he couldn't get out of it, right? Like, I don't want to say like it's that simple, because that's not terribly simple. But that's what can happen against a lineup that simply doesn't quit. Where do you even get a break? I mean, Ramon Urias and James McCann were in the lineup. Okay, they're a bit easier, but nothing was really working for him. He still had 4 Ks in an inning and 2/3, did Reagans. But it seemed to me that everything was just a little bit off. And regardless of how deep your arsenal is and how good it is, if it's all a little bit off and you don't really have anything to turn to in any situation that you feel comfortable with, you wind up being out after 2 innings.
But yeah.
I'm curious where you were at with it, seeing the destruction as the hits just never seem to stop.
So what's kind of funny is I unfortunately didn't get to watch it live. Okay. I just saw the line. I was like, oh boy. Uh-oh. And so I expected it to be like, I didn't know like how it happened, when it happened, whatever. I just expected it all to come in the first inning and it didn't. I was like, oh, okay. This is totally fine. Like, oh my gosh, this is just going to be so bad in the second inning. And what this start did is it highlighted something that is actually a flaw of Reagan's this year. It's his slider. That was a pitch that when he was traded from the Rangers to the Royals, he didn't have. We often quote it as one of the biggest final steps of Reagan's. Obviously, the 92 to 96 velocity was a big one and gained the opportunity to start in the first place. But even with the Rangers, it was more fastball, changeup, cutter. And the curveball still isn't really that absurdly reliable strike pitch. It's a solid one, but it's not this, I know I'm going to just destroy you with my curveball today. And the slider addition was the thing that he takes out lefties with and all of a sudden becomes this really good strikeout pitch to righties. However, he's only thrown it 10% of the time this year. Overall, like to righties and to lefties. And watching this start, he did not have a put-away pitch.
His four-seamer
was great, by the way. His four-seamer...
Was Reagan's...
He was
closer to 15% with it with the Royals last year. Do I have that accurate?
I think that's right. Okay, but also
it was higher than 10%.
It is higher, and also I believe had a much higher put away rate than it does now.
Yes.
Much more dependable. And even watching all these starts, I've rarely seen that down and in slider actually just be like, there it is. There, now you're done. You know, you're like looking for the heater now, and then maybe it might be the cutter. No, it's the slider, and there's no way I'm hitting this. I'm swinging over it. That's what is just, oh man, it warms my heart every time. And
I love
it, watching
when you get
this
excited
one
about pitching.
Oh my gosh. I mean, okay, you saw the Jared Jones slider. I watched that live when I was doing the list.
Okay, so just... an embarrassing thing to admit, Jen walked in on me watching it. I didn't know what to do. I panicked. So I threw my monitor on the ground. You know, when you get caught watching something that explicit, what do? You know, like you feel like you betrayed your partner. So I broke my monitor.
No.
What? That's an illusion. There's nothing inappropriate about that.
No, I'm not. Yeah,
I kept it super clean. But no, how amazing was he? Not to take us off the Cole Reagans track, but
no,
oh,
that
God,
was so
I
sick.
Love Jared.
I mean, he's really turning into like the other must see, like every single time he starts, it's like I'm putting that.
Absolutely. And I wrote yesterday, because I've been doing like more commentary at the front end of my SP chart, saying like,
oh, nice.
Don't get hung up on the times that he doesn't go long. Don't worry about all that sort of stuff. Just enjoy him every fifth day sixth, and you know, because they're going to push him. Let's not worry about what it's going to be in August. Enjoy it. I love watching him pitch. I literally set the timer. Because, you know, the Tigers are the only ones that I always remember, like, when they're going to start. So when I looked in the morning yesterday, I put a little reminder on my phone of, like, Pirates game starts in 10. Right. So anyway, but with Reagans. So you saw the data when you got back.
Well, right.
You realized
the slider was
an issue.
It was not even that, though. It was, like, it was in my mind as I'm going. I'm like, right, this isn't... I mean, what's nice with Reagans is that, I mean, sure, the data is going to help validate whatever... Or maybe I'm have a perception error of like how I'm watching it. But the thing is, I've watched every pitch he's thrown. So like I am mentally throughout the season being aware that like, yeah, the slider is not really that thing. And in this one, the Orioles did a fantastic job of fouling off his four seamer. He didn't allow hits on this pitch. The four seamer was not the problem. This actually was really dependable for him, got a ton of strikes. He just wasn't able to put guys away. And yes, there were those like three changeups that were out of the zone, and some of these balls, like only really one of them was crushed. That was the changeup down in the middle to Santander that was launched. But everything else was pretty much like not the hardest contact. And, you know, there was a double over the bag and there was this and that. And it still was not pristine. These were hittable pitches. They were not like that good placed cutter that gets you, that good placed slider that gets you. And in those moments when he needed it, I think most of them were two strike counts. He just wasn't able to put him away because that slider wasn't there or that cutter wasn't where it needed to be. And the thing is, when you're not against the Orioles, like this is what defines an elite offense. It's not necessarily that they are going to hit home runs off of you. It's not that they are going to do well. It's that if you aren't executing when you need to, they have a higher probability of punishing you for it and at least giving themselves an opportunity to turn those into hits when they would be outs or strikeouts otherwise.
Exactly.
Like a team like the Tigers, this doesn't matter. It would have worked.
Absolutely. No, you're 1,000% right. And that's exactly what I saw with this was, that's why I'm saying, you know, this goes to the O's because a team like the Tigers, they still get beat by this because his stuff wasn't off enough to be like, oh no, he deserved to get crushed. But a team like this, they fight to stay alive in at bat, get a few extra pitches.
Oh man. Yeah.
And then they're going to get their pitch. You know what it reminded me of with the foul balls? This is very old reference, but you know who had a huge foul ball problem early in his career is Justin Verlander.
I was going to say, you're going to mention Justin Verlander because he's the prime example of high fly ball rate. A foul ball rate, rather, yeah.
So frustrating. Because obviously I never missed one of his starts. And you would just watch these teams, and these garbage teams too. I would get so mad, you know. Just the last, you know, lowest team in the league, falling off. But you stay alive. You get 8, 9, 10 pitch at-bats. You're going to get a base hit as a major leaguer more often than not.
Right.
Even against somebody like Verlander. So that's what I saw here. And again, this was not one of the worst teams. This was one of the best. So bottom line is we're not panicked, but I do think it is worth investigating these, especially for somebody that we were both super high on. We couldn't get enough of with the Cole Reagans love. You know, we're basically attached to him now. You hear somebody in the fantasy industry say Cole Reagans, you're going to hear Nick Pollock's name shortly thereafter. I'm on that train with you.
I'm happy that we can all recognize that like Cole Reagans did not deserve to be a 110 ADP.
If you're the conductor, who's the second guy in there? Because I feel like I'm right there. Is there a second guy in a train? Maybe I just I'll man the caboose.
The second guy in the train? What do you mean? Like
with the engineer or the conductor? Do they not have a second in command? Because you're driving the train, right? Like, yeah, I get it.
Conductor and the engineer, right? So let's go.
Okay, then I'm the engineer. You're the conductor. Nice. Cool.
So where are you now? Like, if you're doing your, I don't know when you put out your last.
I'll probably put another one out here May 1st, very soon.
Okay, so where would Reagan's be for you? Like, for example, right now I have him at, I think, at 7 or 8. I have Peralta and Glasnow, Castillo, Lopez, Wheeler and Burns, not in that order, but all of those guys are above Reagan's at the moment. So I guess it's 8.
Think he's going to be single digits for me too, especially with injuries.
Yeah.
You know, I've, and again, you know, we talked about this where I'm like, are we doing the same thing with Castillo? I'm like, no, I don't think we are. So now you take off Strider from my top 8 there.
Right.
They're both injured.
Who wasn't there before, I understand. But like other ones that are on the periphery and hopefully do make some leap. Is okay. Hopefully, Yamamoto's throwing high four seamers.
That's what I was going to ask.
The craft last week with Eno being like, just for the love. Then I saw Twitter agree with me after his last start, be like, yeah, why isn't he throwing? I'm like, okay, good. Okay, we're all now here.
We're all
right?
on board now. Can we get that message to the Dodgers?
Yeah, right. And actually, you know what? I think honestly, my favorite thing about that with Eno was I said, you know, please, can you do a story on this? Like, can you? Because the Dodgers don't want to do high fastballs.
I know.
And I think he's going to pursue this. He should, because it's clearly some organizational thing here.
Yes.
And it makes no sense.
And it's going to hurt him a little bit from keeping him from getting to his top ceiling with Yamamoto.
When I talk about flat fastballs, that only works if you throw it upstairs. If you don't, you're actually hurting yourself. You don't want flat down. You want steep down.
No, flat down is getting laced. Oh my God. Don't even get me started. Why does he keep playing down to his competition? Why are his worst starts against Oakland and the White Sox this year with Bybee?
He's a weird one because again, everyone listened to the crafts with Eno last week. We talked about Bybee and Yamamoto, but just on that with Bybee, it's so funny to me. He actually had his best start of like what Bybee's trying to do in his last outing, which is four seamers up. Because he says stay verde, and actually got his slider and changeup down, which is like, whoa, you did it. And like, that works and fine. If you want to just do that, that works. Okay. Problem is that your changeup and slider generally aren't there. And your four seamer, I know it's a new thing that I've gotten really into since October, but honestly, it's so funny how like we keep pulling off the layers of granular data and it tells us like why those things are what they are. And it's just really nice. And when I talk about IVB or vert and attack angle, which is the same thing as height adjusted VAA, all that stuff, it's really simple. If it's flat, great. You throw it upstairs. If it's steep, you throw it downstairs. That's it. Okay. And Bybee's isn't flat. Like 1.0 is like the average, right? That's what Reynaldo Lopez's is right now. So if you get like to 1.3, 1.4, like, oh boy, that's getting good. Yamamoto's is like 1.7, like Kikuchi's. Okay, that's like absurd.
Oh my God.
And then I see like Puck, who was last year a 1.3, and all of a sudden he goes down to a 0.7. And that means that you were good flat to like bad steep, right?
Yes.
Bybee is like a 0.4.
Oh my goodness.
It is like just absurdly helping upstairs, okay? Do not do that.
Oh my God.
Go downstairs. You get
that's
your whole weakness is allowing too many hits on
exactly. Exactly.
Why do you think that happens, Bybee?
And shouldn't Cleveland be on top of this? Like, you know, pitching's their
thing. Think Cleveland is a good development in majors. I think they're good in the minors.
Ah, and so then they either have to kind of grow on their own at the majors or they'll stagnate.
This has been confirmed by a player.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good to know.
Complained about it. And I don't know if that's public or not, so I'm going to just say that. But
yeah, we'll just say a player.
But like they said this, and like I just did the whole Michael Scott thank you, like super loud, because we always considered like, right, that one, exactly. Like this is the thing that I talk about a ton. I'm ranting completely in this fireside chat, and and we'll get to the fun stuff in a moment. But this is something I talk about a ton: is our perception of what is a good development for pitching is wrong. It's so swayed by the quality of pitcher in a small sample size.
It's entirely results. Where if they have a breakout season,
if someone come together, sometimes it's not even the pitching staff. It's just the good infield defense. And the best example for that is the Giants, where they had Kai Correa as their infield instructor. And that had like the best defense behind them. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, the Giants are great because Anthony Desclafani had an injured season, came here, and had a great defense. And Alex Wood all of a sudden had a decent time. And so did Alex Scott. Like, no, it was this defense was great. And these guys are more injured or not. Right.
Yep.
And then we assume like the Dodgers are good with what they're doing. And like, well, hold on a second. This isn't good. You just had an elite defense for a bit. And Gonsolin had like a 208 BABIP or something. Like, I don't know if that's really like the Dodgers being a great developmental place. And then you have the Astros who are like falling behind now.
Oh yeah. Big time.
And
when's the last time?
Sorry. I'm ranting. I know it's a fire. I'm sorry. Sorry guys.
No, it's okay. Let me drink. Let the fire heat you back up and bring you down in a weird way. So the bottom line is we're not selling high on Cole Reagans. Yeah. I would actually knock on a door here just to see if there's any measure of discount. I'll pay full price, but if you could get even a shred of a discount coming off of this, like, oh man, I bought in on this guy. He gets whooped by one of the best teams in the league. Reagans
right now.
Now there's a challenge trade. Now that is something that I could do an SP for SP. And I would absolutely take the Reagans side 100 out of 100 times. No shade to Gallons. I'm a Gallon gal through and through, but I'm just nervous for this year. So maybe not through and through because I just worry about that workload.
He's
so
actually a really good example of he's exactly what Tanner Bibee should do. What Gallon does is he throws low call strike fastballs and puts curveballs and changeups underneath it.
Yep.
He's really good at this. This is what he just does. It's actually what I thought Shane Bieber should do this year. And then all of a sudden he has a much better four seamer before he got hurt. And then I was like, oh, never mind. Don't listen to me. Gallon. Yeah. And Zach Gallon, when he flails, when he doesn't have as good outings, like actually the last one, it's when the four seamer creeps up too far. And he does sometimes save it in two strike counts, but generally you want to see low called strikes and then underneath it. And he actually has good vert. And so does Tanner Bibee. Tanner Bibee doesn't have, it's not like exceptional. Oh my gosh. What is that word? What did I combine with something like that?
I think you were going like for objectionable. Like and exceptional.
You know me, I say, oh my lorsch, right? That's what I do.
Oh my lorsch is really funny.
Yeah, that's one
is gosh, I'm sure gosh squeezing that in there?
Yeah, it's gosh.
Is that what that is? Oh, okay, that's what I thought. Okay, oh my lorsch, that's hilarious.
And I'm just going to obviously eventually have a shirt that says, oh my lorsch.
You need to.
But he has he doesn't have exceptional vert, right? It's not like a 19 inches, not like Pivetta or Crawford or something. It's good, but it's not like, oh man, this is insane. So this is amazing. But what you do see is if you have good vert, you actually then can steal those called strikes really effectively low. And then when they try and go for it, the angle of it coming in is still not good. So Bibee, just do that. Okay.
The tools are there. He needs to execute. And that's part of the frustration. Like I was saying, he was playing down to competition. And yes, it is driven by the fact that he's on one of my big teams. I have two main events and he's the ace of one of them. So, you know, anyway,
but I'm going to get us back on track and we are going to have the fun part of this, the fireside chat. This is where we get to compete in battle. And we're going to do that after this break. All right. It is time for the weekly battle between Paul Spohr and Nick Pollock. And to review, entering this week, the scoreboard was Pollock 6, Spohr 5. But oh, we might have some changes. As last week, just as a review.
2 weeks ago.
Weeks ago. Last time we battled.
Correct.
We had in our streamer picks, I had Bowden Francis against Colorado, which didn't happen. He did go into relief and got a win, but no, not enough points. It was 8.3 points. You had Alec Marsh against the Mets, 7.7 points. That is a wash. My sit of the week was Cutter Crawford against Baltimore. What does he do? He has 19 points. He killed it. Yours was Michael King against the Dodgers, and that was 6.5 points, which is a win for Spohr. My start of the week was Jose Soriano, who had two starts. Second one looked good. The first one, unfortunately, was not good. And that was only 9.4 points, which means he wasn't a star quite yet. I was slightly too early there. You had
Still
Cody
love
Bradford,
him, by the way.
You had Cody Bradford right before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And that was 29 points, which is, again, a point for Paul Spore. And lastly, we had our one-game matchup. I had Tanner Houck against the Angels, while you had Reed Detmers at Boston. I thought I had this in the bag.
The one bad start from Tanner Houck, you got it.
It was one DraftKings point versus 29 for Spore. That is a win for Spore. Right now, catching up, you had 3-0 week there. The Spore, 8 for Spore, 6 for me. As we go to this week, and we, of course, always start with our streamers. Who is your stream pick of the week?
All right, get to play Homer this week because he's still under 19. I think I read your last piece that mentioned this guy, and you said, I'm probably not going to be able to use him as a streamer again. Turns out you still could. Casey Mize, at only 19%, falls under the 20% threshold that I believe you use in the SP roundup as well. Casey, going against Casey. And I respect Casey, but I do not yet fear them.
Nice.
I do. Right? The Royals are good, but we don't immediately run away from them with pitchers that we like. I like Casey Mize. I've been impressed with what he's doing. Give me my boy Casey Mize against the Royals at home.
Yeah, I dig that one a lot. I'm shocked. I don't understand why everyone's just shying away from the Tigers.
K's in win potential, maybe?
But even like Olsen is too undervalued. I think Flaherty is finally getting some love. But I mean, obviously, he's got his strikeout so far. But Casey Mize, to me, is the first two games he was getting his footing. He also had a really weird debut with the game pushed back twice and the weather and stuff. And what we've seen recently, especially against the Rangers, was a four-seamer was upstairs consistently. He got better sliders for strikes.
I was so impressed. He was looking good.
The slider is really the last element for him to be getting that strikeout in an inning. You need to see that slider actually getting whiffs and harnessed correctly. I think Mize can get there. So I absolutely love this one. I think that's great.
And I also want to say, before we go to yours, I do think that the Tigers offense can get better. It's not just fandom wish casting. I think the young guys have to get going. Obviously, it all comes down to Torque, Keith, Meadows, joining Green, who's actually been doing well. They need to be with him. And Kerry Carpenter's in that group too. He's been playing well. Carpenter, Green, and Canha are the only ones playing well. They need Meadows, Keith, and Torque. You got to have more than three guys in a nine-person lineup. But I do think the Tigers can get better and give some support to those guys. So stick with your Tigers pitchers, except for Maeda. You can cut him everywhere. I'm totally fine with that. But all the other ones, I'm totally in on. And spec now on Matt Manning, because I think if Maeda blows up again today against Tampa Bay, then it's going to be to the IL with him with something, and then Matt Manning will be coming up.
Only Matt Manning was looking more like early spring Matt Manning.
Agreed. That would maybe be pushing it more if he was like dialed in the way he was. But yeah. I think another Maeda bomb is like, oh, your shoulder's really bothering
you're
you,
absolutely right. Which honestly tells me if Maeda's, that's one other pin falling. You have Sawyer Gibson Long out.
Unfortunately.
And what do you know, guys? SP6 very shortly might be Jackson Jobe.
One step away.
We're getting so, so close here. I literally have him stashed in the
I don't blame you. If you can afford it,
I can't help it.
You know, if you can afford it, you stash Jobe now. Jobe, Skeens are the two big guys. You know, I know last year we got blessed with so many pitching prospects. There will be others who emerge, but those are the two big dogs, and they are on the cusp, both of them, I think. So especially Skeens, because he's at AAA. But you know, it won't take but another injury, which I don't want for my Tigers, but it's inevitable. So Joe will eventually be up. But talk to us about your stream.
By the way. Yeah, there's, by the way, there's like three guys who are just that tier of like prospects. It's Jared Jones, Skeens, and Jobe. Unfortunately, yes. I mean, maybe you can throw in Cade Horton in there, maybe some Christian Scott, but like,
I'm certainly intrigued by both of them, but
do not project those three onto the other prospect pitchers that we're aware of right
now. Correct. That would be very unfair to the rest of the prospects coming up.
Okay. For me, there are actually some really interesting ones that I could go for. There's like Albert Suarez against the Athletics. Yep. There's, we mentioned Tyler Alexander against the Tigers. Mitchell Parker is not streamable.
Let's detour on him real quick. Cause I was going to ask about him after you gave your streamer.
Yeah.
You're out even at Miami?
No, I'm not out at all.
Oh, not streamable because his roster rate's too high?
Oh yeah. Too high.
Oh my goodness. So the market quickly reacted to Mitchell Parker.
Instantly.
I guess when you go
the Dodgers and Astros.
I guess when you beat up the Dodgers and the Astros, everyone gets there. Okay, cool. I thought you were saying that you were out. And I was wondering what was up.
I put him at 59 on my list. And everyone's like, this is crazy, but I'm like, hi, the cliff is here and you might as well just try this.
And
yeah,
I was so impressed how he just back pocketed that splitter.
Unreal.
In the second game. He didn't use it in the first game. He's like, oh, I got this. Hey, Astros. Oh, you watched the tape against the Dodgers? Did you see this split piece? Bang. And I was so impressed. Who the heck is Mitchell Parker? I love it.
It was so fun. I got to find this clip because I could have sworn I saw like a graphic that was, you know, your typical, what does Mitchell Parker throw? And it was four seamer and curveball in the zone. And then the next pitch was a splitter.
Unbelievable.
It was so cool. Mitchell Parker, just a quick blurb on him is for the Dodgers, it was four seamer curve. And the curve is a lovely hook. It looks great. It's dependable. He throws in the zone. It does all the stuff you want. It is really, really a good one. It's a beautiful lefty curveball that we just know about. Mm-hmm. The four seamer is strange. It's not to me an elite four seamer. It is 91, 92. He does get good extension, which does make that more like 94.
It elevates.
He does have like 17 vert or so, which is above average. That's good. We like that. Not great attack angle at all. Like 0.7, like the puck angle, right?
Okay.
So that's just like the reference point for everybody is like, yep, puck angle. There it is. DL
above
Hall
or below puck.
Right. So I think it really needs, you know, the tunneling of that curve and that establishment of it, right? But good location with it, generally upstairs when the curveball then tunnels well with that. And then you had the splitter that was actually like legitimately down against the Astros. Like he did not really mess around with that. So in that last outing against Houston was really impressive to me because he commanded all three pitches and threw a ton of strikes. And whoa, okay. Biggest knock is that it's the Nationals. Wins are going to be a little bit harder. This is two starts, and we don't know if this is really something he can actually consistently be. But I have him at 59 on the list because I say, yeah, just go for that. The guys take underneath, I really can't emphasize this enough. Do not get too enamored to the guys on your team who are outside of the top 40 or so. Like
two,
really, just
pop.
Go for it. Just
don't
go for it.
Don't worry about rest of the season. Abolish rest of the season. I have a theory, and if you can't disprove it, then I'm sticking with it. It's Steven Strasburg throwing left-handed.
Oh man, no!
To get money out of him. No, Nick, I'm joking. I'm saying real life Steven Strasburg. I'm not saying he's anything like Steven Strasburg. I'm saying it's
like,
a
really good curve. He's got the. Oh wait,
no. Does not have the fastball to be Strasburg. No, my joke was that like he's like,
I was like right there for a second.
You like the curveball? No. That's too high of praise. But no,
nowhere.
So they can get money, get value out of that contract. They've just made him throw lefty. It was a way for the Nats to get some value out of that contract. I know Strauss actually retired, but I am in on Mitchell Parker. I think you go pick him up. It's pretty Vargas Rule-y right now, but I might even go Vargas Rule plus where that first bump, I might not jump right off. Like if he gets clobbered at Texas after beating up Miami this weekend, I don't know if I'm fully out. I want to see what the makeup of a bad start would be from Parker.
Yeah, right. I mean,
this looks pretty intriguing.
Like, the splitter's just gone. The curveball isn't there. I'm like, okay, is this like one time blip or two? Like he gets the extra one more
exactly.
To see if that command is there or not.
Yeah. For me, he gets two, especially if one of them was against Texas, a great team. So
it's just
anyway,
why does it have to be the Nationals? So Mitchell Parker would be one. Sean Manaea maybe against the Giants on Wednesday, but I don't really like Sean Manaea that much, but the Giants, but then they just messed up Quintana. So I'm like,
revenge
really
game though, because Justin told me how much Manaea hated the way he was used in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
So I think he's going full revenge game on that one.
I totally understand that, but that might mess you up. You might have, speaking of the Giants, you have like Keaton Wynn against the Giants.
Against
the Pirates.
Pick.
And he looked really good in that last one yesterday against the Mets, where the splitter was down, the four seamer and sinker were up, and he actually split it. Well, it's just 6 Ks, and that's kind of like the peak for me for Keaton Wynn, because it's not a splitter that is going to be getting a ton of swing and miss, unfortunately.
Exactly.
But I'm just going to take the clear and obvious one,
nothing
which is
Clark
Schmidt against the Athletics. He's at 19% roster right now. And that's just, I mean, he's another one of these guys to me that I think is just undervalued right now. He destroys right-handers. Sinker is so good inside to them. Sweeper and curve is great away to them. He also has a solid changeup that sometimes comes out. You have a cutter that he's getting better at against lefties. And that's really the biggest concern is just, what does he do against lefties? That's always been the big knock. But when you are good, 70% of the matchups you have against a batter, and then you're going against the Athletics, you don't have that lefty to destroy you, and you're on a winning ball club, like, yeah, that is good. So I'm going with Clark Schmidt there.
Clark Schmidt is somebody I would consider buying high on because I don't know that you have to buy that high. I think people might be trying to sell him thinking that there's a pending collapse because of the 155 whip, which I think he can greatly improve. I don't believe in his 10.4 hits per nine. I really like Clark Schmidt. I love him for the pick this week against the A's. You can't go wrong. And hey, under 20%, that's all you need here. So it's a little bit of an easier one because it's the A's, but I don't care. It counts. Yeah,
sit of the week. Oh boy. So you've got one that makes sense. But
I'm not going too far afield here, right?
Yeah, what do we got?
I'm going with Jordan Hicks. I'm still a little skeptical on this. I think this is a great example, though, because I've been watching some of his starts because I came in pretty skeptical. You know, when they decided that they were going to start Jordan Hicks, I'm like, okay, I want it to work. I root for somebody like that. He seems like a cool guy. You know, I've got some friends who have diabetes who love him because he's out there grinding with diabetes, makes him kind of a fan favorite in that respect. And it'd just be cool to see it work. But I can't ignore the skills, or in this case, the lack thereof, which is a 7% strikeout minus walk rate. And it's akin to when he first started pitching out of the bullpen, where you can see some of the nastiest pitches, some of the most gifable pitches out there at times, but they don't do anything to batters necessarily, right? Like a lot of times they can be spit on, or they might get the swing and miss, but it's only one strike within the at bat. He's just not missing enough bats. He's still walking a few too many guys. Pittsburgh is the AL or the NLKC. I respect them. I do not necessarily fear them. But in this case, I respect them enough to sit Jordan Hicks at 73%. Not cutting him, but I'm sitting him.
Yeah. So Jordan Hicks is interesting to me. I consider him, honestly, a Toby because
I think that's totally fair.
The sweeper and splitter are too low strike rates at the moment, unfortunately. The sweeper just does not get hit hard, but he only has a 50% strike rate on it.
And that's seen the thing with the nastiness.
Well, right.
It's like too nasty. He can't rein it in to do damage with it for Jordan Hicks.
And we saw in the spring actually do really well. So we were like, oh, maybe that is there. But then, no, we haven't quite seen it yet. What's interesting about Jordan Hicks to me is the sinker. Now, this is obviously coming in softer. We actually saw 97 in his last one, but it's averaging 96 for the year after, of course, 99 and 100 in previous seasons for his last five. But Jordan Hicks is still getting the results on this pitch. ICR is 83rd percentile on all sinkers. And keep in mind, most of the time, those sinkers are thrown sparingly and to same-handedness only. While Jordan Hicks just throws this thing in there, and for a 26% ICR rate, that's absurdly good, especially at a 71% strike rate, which means his strike minus ICR rate is 82nd percentile among all sinkers, which is so good for a pitch you throw 52% of the time. It's a 60% striker. When you see 60%, you're like, oh boy, let's go.
You're signing up.
And that's the floor. That's what's interesting to me about Hicks is like, yeah, he's not going to be a big strikeout guy because the sweeper and splitter are not waking up.
Yep.
And he is still going to have some walks, I think, because those pitches aren't really supplementing the sinker, but he's still really hard to hit.
And
that makes the ERA feel like, okay, this is like a three, this is going to be like a 3-5 guys with like a 120 plus whip or something.
Exactly. And that's right? What I was going to say that I kind of trailed off on my own point there about watching him. You see how it works when you're watching him. You're like, oh, this actually makes some sense because he is really difficult to square up, Jordan Hicks is. But then you go back to the core stats that we love, strikeout minus walk, swing and strike rate, whatever, you go to the next secondary and tertiary levels as well. And that is what breeds some of your concerns. So yeah, I think he is going to be one of those guys where the ERA is sub 4, but the whip could be 1.3. And that has play, but you need to protect that whip because we go so much by ERA that those guys, I think they get overrated more than the reverse, which is early career Joe Musgrove, who would have a low 4s ERA, but a sub 120 whip.
Yeah, you're Joe Ryan.
That profile is underrated. Joe Ryan is like that when he's not at his best. Yeah. I think that profile is underrated. I think the Jordan Hicks version, the lower ERA, higher whip, is overrated.
You know what? It's actually pretty obvious which kind of pitchers are one and which kind of pitchers are the other, I think. And the Joe Ryan type is four-seamer stuff. It's like Matthew Boyd, where it's Hunter Green even at times, where it's four-seamer heavy. And then when you have sinker heavy, it's going to be on the other side. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but Jordan Hicks was actually kind of interesting. He's lowered his walk rate this year to 9%, and he has a sub-1 whip at the moment. I do wonder.
There are things to like.
Yeah, I do wonder.
I did have
to
find somebody over 50%.
Oh no! I trust me. I totally get this one, and this could be like 5 innings, 300 runs, and like just boo.
and 11 base.
This is not a bad pick in any way. I find Jordan Hicks so fascinating.
Yeah,
because he's on this.
He really is.
He Jordan Hicks could be either way at this point. Like either the sinker becomes more of a 65% strike pitch, and all of a sudden the whole thing falls apart. Or he has a foundation of that sinker and like he finally starts to get the sweeper working a little bit more and has that run.
Is it too obvious to compare him to Dustin May?
No, Dustin May is a great comp. I think Dustin May had a better secondary step, but maybe he does get there. That's a really good call though.
Totally agree.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back because Dustin May, his sinker got crushed.
Oh,
believe
okay.
it or not. If I think he did at least, let me just double check this. But from
that would be
crushed.
Pretty different. Then,
okay.
Though.
Yeah, 2021 Dustin May had like a 59% strike minus ICR rate. So I'm gonna.
I was thinking, what was it in 23? Because you know he had 48 innings before he got hurt, and the makeup of that stat line looks a lot like 62%
striker
this.
With a 23% ICR. So yeah, there you go. Yeah, good comp. I like it.
Sweet. So yeah. Who's your sit? You. The guy burned you last time in our game, game of the week, and now you're saying, I don't want anything to do with you.
So, okay, so I take sit of the week as just kind of me expressing concerns that not necessarily I'm going to act on. Like, I'm going to start him in this, just to let you guys know. If I have Reed Detmers on my team, I'm starting. He's a probable start in my rankings. That said, I do want to at least shine a spotlight on the flaws that we're starting to see in the last two starts for Reed Detmers.
That's what I wanted to do with Hicks, too. So these are not must sits. Yep. This is for our game.
Right. I think anyone that's over 50% rostered is just generally like, yeah. Or if it's like an obvious one, like, yeah, this guy's good, but like he's going against the Dodgers. Well, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So Reed Detmers, what made him really interesting is a four-seamer improving with Vert upstairs and then having like good enough curveballs and changeups and sliders. Thing is, over the years, as someone who has been very much in on Reed Detmers in previous years, I'm very aware of why that didn't work now. And why it didn't work isn't just that the four-seamer, which is better this year, and he's a better version of himself, was too hittable. It was more that the slider that would have this 25% swing strike rate or so would all of a sudden just be located poorly and wouldn't be going down and inside a right-hander. It's kind of the stuff I'm talking about with Cole Reagans right now. We've seen with Reed Detmers. So 90% rostered and going against the Twins, that could very well turn badly. And especially with the last two starts of a lot of pitches that are commanded very much in the middle of the zone and more hittable than we want, I'm a little scared that Reed Detmers is going to just be one of those 5 innings, 300 runs, 7 hits kind of outings against the Twins.
Yeah, there is reason for some concern there. Again, we're both starting him still. And so just to underscore, again, these are not must sits, but, you know, raise some concerns here, especially on somebody with a 2.12 ERA and a 1.04 whip. You might be thinking, oh, I would never sit him. And again, you probably shouldn't. But if you are in a shallower league with a deep rotation and you can be a little bit choosier, maybe you do take a spot where you say, hey, I'm out. Detmers is somebody, man, that my heart versus my head is a really difficult bet. I love Reed Detmers. Like, I just love him. And so, it's like, and then when you got that fandom, you have to make sure that you're letting the numbers put that in check. And even when I watch him sometimes and I see some of the flaws, I'm like, okay. You love Reed Detmers, but he's not an ace yet. So just bring it back.
Right.
I do want to use this as a quick jump off to talk a little bit more about your boy, Jose Soriano from the same team that you did prop up last episode. And while you did take an L on that, I think the overall is still quite positive. Where were you at after the 2 Tampa Bay starts for your boy Soriano? Are you still in? Because you got me on board and I'm taking off with this. I love Soriano. Yeah.
So I'm actually a little surprised that Soriano is throwing as many four-seamers as he is. Because it's way worse than the sinker, in my view. Like the four-seamer, I know it comes in hard at 99, but the shape of it is pretty average, if not below average, with as no vert or anything like that. While the sinker gets a ton of drop and comes in still hard at 97, 98. And it's kind of the Hicks thing, 28% ICR, and that he just needs to throw more strikes with 62% strike rate thus far. But he keeps it down more so than Hicks does. which I think is really cool. And then you throw in, compared to Hicks, an actual reliable secondary, which is the curveball, which has a 65% strike rate thus far. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of that. And 43% CSW as well is just phenomenal. So Jose Soriano, I'm pretty intrigued by. I don't know how sustainable it is as far as that those strike rates on the curve and if the four-seamer is going to hurt him. There's also a splitter, by the way, in there that has a 68% strike rate, which is kind of cool. And it can work for him at times. But Soriano is someone that, yeah, I'm rolling with right now. And he, actually, I think I had him at 61, where I had Mitchell Parker at 59.
Cool. No, I'm with that. Like he's intriguing to me. He has some nasty stuff that I think he could make work. So
yeah.
I just want to give you your due on.
I appreciate that. Now star of the week. By the way, I'm happy like every single week to just lose it of the week. That's great. It's so on brand to be like, I can't predict when they're going to do badly, but I got you when every time they're going to be good. I'm all positive, terrible, the negative.
Well, no, I agree with that too, though, because it is so hard. Like, you don't know when a pitch is going to be off, right? Like, they don't, right? Yeah. If they knew, then obviously they would do something differently. So how could we possibly know? So I totally agree with that.
I hate preaching the doom and gloom, but hey, it's a fun one for us to highlight things that, you know, you should be on the lookout
Maybe
for.
Have some longer term concerns.
Exactly. Star of the week. Who do you got here? Someone that we didn't really think much of entering the season.
No, we didn't. I don't know that I heard anybody. And if you did, feel free to send me your article or your tweet or whatever. I'll give you your love on Jose Buto. I was not there. You know, one of the big flaws of this Mets team is the lack of pitching. He could be a game changer for them. Now, he did get knocked around a bit by the Dodgers. Not even so much knocked around. Actually, it was his command and control that were a big problem. He ended up walking five, and they made him pay a little bit. Only two runs charged to his ledger. So in the grand scheme of it, you got off pretty light if you took the plunge against the Dodgers in 4 1/3. But the two starts before that were quite sharp against KC and Detroit, and we've talked about the exploits of both. One team we think is a pretty good hitting team, the Royals. The Tigers, meanwhile, not so much. But I like to jump back on the Jose Buto train here this week against St. Louis and think he can really shine back. So if you thought it was a Vargas rule and you jumped off after the Dodgers, I would encourage you to reconsider, get back on, don't get too hung up on the 14% walk rate, considering it's pretty much all built up off the Dodgers start. Jump in on the 32% K rate and look for a good start here against the Cards with Jose Buto.
Yeah, so I don't mean this because it's just fun with numbers, so don't worry, guys. Okay. Between his four-seamer, his sinker, his changeup and slider and sweeper, which pitch do you think has a strike rate above 60%?
I'm going to guess none of them.
None of them.
Now,
59% on the four seamer.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Is that built off of the last game?
It was the worst one. 57% of the four seamer, and nothing else was above, get this, 36%. And he still managed to only go 200 runs in that one.
And still got six punchies. I will say that like that's surviving then when your stuff isn't there for Buto. Oh, what about the other two starts? Was he throwing anything in?
Not really. I mean, 60% a little bit in the lower 60s. But honestly, to the tune of that, we have a new stat out this year called mistake rate, which essentially assesses which pitches inside the zone have double the chance of allowing a hit. So it's not like waste, which is out of the zone. This is about which ones are you throwing that we call a mistake pitch, right, in a game. And really low, 3.2% for Buto, which is the 12th best of any major league starter. So that 94th percentile. That's pretty cool. And that does kind of showcase like, all right, this is going to be, there's some style to that, right? The nibbling a little bit. So I dig this. I think that Buto has just generally enough of a kitchen sink. Changeups and sliders are both 20% swing strike rate pitches. And hopefully that four seamer can stick that 12 to 13% swing strike rate as he keeps that upstairs. So I dig that one. Mine is someone that I'm going to just, I don't know. I feel like the second start gave a little bit more of a depressed attitude towards him, but man, I am falling for Edward Cabrera and
love
he's
it.
Only
Let's
47% rostered right now. And I'm honestly a little surprised that people aren't jumping on a 36% K rate yet.
Do you think it's A, the Marlins, B, history, or the actual answer, C, both?
Yeah. I mean, it is both. It is the fact that also he had 10 base runners in five innings in his second game, 145 whip.
He did the opposite of Mitchell Parker. He had a tough outing on Sunday, which is when a lot of leagues do bids. So maybe that depressed some of the bids, whereas Mitchell Parker dominated the Astros on Sunday, which skyrocketed his bids.
Absolutely. So what's very interesting, though, with Eric Cabrera is that last year in 2023, Eric Cabrera had a slider he threw about 8% of the time for a 55% strike rate and 10% swing strike rate. He threw 13 sliders in his last game. All of them were strikes. Oh. And not one hit was allowed. That's cool. That is very cool. 28% swing strike rate so far, and he's throwing 15% of the time overall. 86% strike rate because of that one, but also in the one before it was a 60% strike rate. And the biggest thing for Cabrera has been really being changeup and curve in 2023, while the four seamer was utilized a little too much, 28%, and had the worst strike rate of all of them, 57%. That really pushed up that 15% walk rate, right? Changeup and curve are both above 60%. It should be fine. It's just that you'll have this third one that's just taking up too much space. Nowadays, I'm seeing the slider really step up and become more of that strike pitch, which is why he has only an 8% walk rate thus far. Mm-hmm. And the four-seamer is getting pulled back, but also getting more strikes as well, and is at 96 miles per hour. Meanwhile, the changeup is still filthy. The curveball actually wasn't good in that second start. That was the biggest fault of his. But I think that's actually one that he normally has for him. And watching that first game specifically, even moments in that second game a ton too against the Cubs, I saw like a legitimate four-pitch ace. Like I had flashes of Sandy. I don't throw that around.
Oh, wow.
Because this is a slider that had that nice, tight, 89 mile per hour break down and away to right-handers. Changeup that's hard at 94. Fastball that gets elevated sometimes at 98. Like that is the Sandy look. The only difference is that there's no sinker, and instead it's a more reliable curveball. But I'm in for this. Now, obviously, strikes are everything for Cabrera. And yeah, that was the issue here, 11 for 25 on the curve, right, in that last start. It's not a guarantee that he's going to completely get over that hump, but that new slider and that different fastball approach, I think, changes things for him, and that's so exciting. He's my star of the week. He gets the Nationals. He should like explode there. Everyone goes, oh, wait, yeah, we should all be picking up Edward Cabrera.
Yeah, I think his roster rate will soar. He probably won't be eligible for star of the week next week if he does against Washington. What about our game?
This is the last one. Oh, man, it's been a long one here, but this is fun hanging with you by the fire. Of course, after last week, it was nice that we got a little bit of a longer one this week for you guys. And this is an interesting one. It is
the first time with like ace names too,
yeah,
right? Like we've been going kind of those mid-tier risers. We're going big dog names here.
And I think I get the easy one, but we'll see. It's the Phillies versus the Padres. And I'm going with my boy Aaron Nola. I call him Easy A because if you don't know, it's a big easy in Nola. That is New Orleans. And he's Nola.
He also went to school there, by the way.
And he went to LSU. That's right. So I call him Easy A. And you are taking Joe Musgrove. How do you feel about this?
I feel pretty good, right? Like when we first were going over the names of games that we could do, you're like, well, aren't you going to want Nola too? And I was like, you know, I see it pretty close here. And I think this is a great matchup in particular too, because it's a couple aces that certainly haven't been their ace selves, right? Maybe they even have some of that trepidation where you're like, how are we feeling about these guys? You know, for me, it's a situation where you can't bench them. I don't think you can bench them in any sort of league right now. You got to ride it out with these types of guys early on, even when there are bumps. Big encouragement from Nola last start out. But for Musgrove, my guy, I felt a lot better with the Toronto outing. There was only three strikeouts, but there were zero walks after seven the two games before that. I didn't even care about the strikeouts. I was dialed in for this one. I was watching it. Love the San Diego broadcast. That makes any game an easy watch. Game over there. Like you could have the two worst pitchers ever, and I'm still going to have a good time. Thankfully, it wasn't that, though. It was Musgrove getting into his bag, doing his thing a lot better. Bassett was okay here and there, but it was really the Musgrove show. And I really, really felt confident about him coming out of this one after quite a few bumps so far this year, right? It's been the ups and downs. Spring wasn't great. The Korea start wasn't great. Where are we at on Joe Musgrove? You finally now have back-to-back QSs that you can really sink your teeth into. And this one didn't come with four walks the way the April 15th one did against Milwaukee. So I feel a lot better about Musgrove right now. This Phillies lineup is not easy, but I hope these two battle and keep both these good lineups at bay for like a 2-0 type game.
Oh man, by the way, Bassett versus Musgrove is Spider-Man pointing meme.
A million percent.
Right now. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's actually something about Musgrove for me is that I had him on the fringe of the AGA tag for a bit. But then I realized like, no, this is like a Bassett Holly, right? This is like a 24% strikeout rate guy with good solid ratios, but not really threatening to be that overwhelming stud for your roster.
You know who it reminds me of? You say Bassett, I'll say his teammate Berríos, who I used to love and always kept projecting that next level. Yep. I learned from that mistake and realized to accept Musgrove at what he's at, which is very good, but stop trying to project that extra. Where does it come from? It's not magic. So I totally agree with you in the general principle there.
And with Nola, what's interesting is they had this one really amazing outing where he was throwing curveballs perfectly down in glove side. And it was just brilliant. I think he had like 12 over 36 whiffs on that curve in that game. And then you got the White Sox and like, he did not pitch actually that well, but
he didn't.
It's the Cry Sox. So whatever.
This is exactly what you said about the Reagans thing though, where you were saying against a different team, the results would have looked a lot better because you look at eight innings, two runs, seven Ks, a walk, and you're like, what do you mean Nola didn't pitch well? Go watch it. Like a good team would have taken advantage of some of those, but he was just able to knife through them like a warm knife and butter.
Come on, thank you. So he's not actually at his peak right now, as you mentioned. The Padres are going to give him some, you know, some run for his money. It is in San Diego, which does help both of these guys, as opposed to being in Philly. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. And of course, with my record, like obviously, if I'm taking the easy one, I am going to lose this one. So can't wait for that. But Spore, that is going to conclude this episode of the Fireside Chat. Tell everybody, what are you up to these days? What should they be looking out for?
They should be looking out for my Twitch show 3 days a week, Monday, Thursday, Friday, at 8 a.m. on Monday and Thursday, Central Time, that is. And then around 10 or 10:30, it's a little bit nebulous on Friday because it's after the Sleeper and the Bus podcast, where I go over the box scores from the day before and just talk baseball for a while. Sometimes we play batter up. Have you played that game? Were you trying to guess that? I don't know that that would be a good one for you. No offense, because it's trying to guess the silhouette of a batter's swing in 10 guesses. Man. It's pretty tough. And you get like clues based on like, fun. Their team and all that, but also Immaculate Grid. You know, we play some games, we hang out, we just do what you do, right? Different, but the same in that you're hanging out doing baseball, whatever that entails. So we do that 3 times a week on Twitch. I've got my Sleeper in the Bus podcast with Justin Mason, got my daily SP chart. Like I said, I've been putting commentary at the front end of those, just like little things that are on my mind. You know, I wanted to rant about Jared, not even rant, praise Jared Jones and talk about how cool he was. Yeah, ramble about Jared Jones a little bit. So yeah, that's pretty much what's going on. We're in the full swing. Like I feel like I'm in my routine right now. I kind of love where everything's at. I'm so psyched about baseball being on every day. I still get bummed by rainouts or the short slates. But yeah, we're fully in the routine now.
Oh yeah, we're there. That's awesome to hear. And yeah, I'll try the batter up game and completely fail. It's gonna be great.
You should. I think it'll be fun. And again, just like, if you're not going to recognize it right away, my strategy, just pick a player. Get some info. Like I don't try to nail it in one. So I'll put Pete Alonso in. Let me find out. Is he a first baseman? Is he on the Mets? You know, just put somebody in.
Okay, cool. That sounds fun. And I've definitely heard people say like you should just like windups and everything too. I'm like, that sounds great. Also,
that would be amazing. I would love to see your success.
I personally don't have the technical ability to create that, so I got to figure out some solution. But
maybe
that
need
sounds
to
like a great thing. I would have so much
reach
fun
out to the batter up guy and say, hey, can we do a pitcher list?
Yeah, right? There we go.
I'm just saying.
That sounds awesome. I do remember sending it to Pitching Ninja, be like, do Christopher Robin for the silhouette stuff. And he did. It was so great. And I was like, let me do a thread about why this game is amazing. Hold on.
Have you seen the Foolish Baseball video on it?
Oh, yeah. No, that was a year ago. That was,
so fantastic. Bailey
sent me that after. I was like, oh, yeah, right. That's so good. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about Winnie the Pooh baseball, which is like, you don't understand how hard this game is.
Hard game,
It is not made for its target audience. So, of course, this gaming forum gets introduced to it, and they're like, well, this is a game that we need for us hardcore people. And they like,
yep,
spend so much time on this game. It's so funny. It's amazing. It's a legendary game. Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing all that stuff from you. For us, I mean, it's the same old stuff. We actually, if you're unaware, I have a new podcast on Fridays. It's for PL Pro members, where I do three things. One, I have my full-on Sin Start grid for the next week, my two start pitcher rankings, as well as I go over 12-team and 15-team fab decisions. I realized that this is something a lot of people were requesting for me, and it's extra time that I, you know, it takes a lot of effort to put into this. So I figured,
how long is that pod?
It's not that long. It's like 30 minutes, okay. But I have images, cheat sheets made
for
you to refer to. That's inside the descriptions of it. And then I only talk about 12 team and 15 options, but I go through everybody that is under 30% rostered in 12 teamers and under 50% rostered in 15.
That
teamers.
Is splendid. That's really incredible.
So go take a listen to that one. And I'm not giving like the exact number. Go listen to Vlad Zedler for that. But I'll tell you generally, these are the ones I like if you're looking for one start, two step, all that kind of stuff. That's called the SP Fab Forecast. And you can find it on our website, of course, inside the PL Pro Hub for those who have PL Pro. But that is it for today, Spore. It is always wonderful hanging with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter @Spore and @PitcherList.